I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Altitude's undefeated. Crack rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of makeup.
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. Happy spooky season, everybody. Liverpool are not having a good time. Dominic Baggi and FC Cincinnati have won the Supporter Shield, and of course, it's all due to the former fourth-round super draft pick of the Rapids that they won the Shield. And no one is more upset about the altitude blackout than Stan and Josh Kroenke. Joining me now to talk about the Rapids getting 4 points from 1 week, you lack conviction, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Hey man, how's it going? It is good to talk to you, Matthew. I'm here as your friendly neighborhood sidekick.
You're not my sidekick, Mark. We're 50-50 in this.
Yeah, well, no, you always could do the lead. I mean, because you always do the lead, I'm kind of the sidekick. I'm okay being the sidekick. I'm admitting I'm being the sidekick. You also edit, so I feel like I'm okay being the sidekick. But I mean, okay. You know, I think we're the only reason I'm not the sidekick is because I'm not like Robin to your
Batman.
I was actually going to say funny enough to your Howard Stern in the sense that I am Robin to your Batman. I'm not Robin to your Howard Stern in the sense that Robin just kind of sits in the chair and goes, isn't that funny? But she doesn't really know anything. But, so like we're equals in terms of Rapids knowledge, but we're unequals when it comes to other things, and I'm okay with that, but I like that you would like it to be a 50-50 partnership. I'm all in for that. It's 'cause you're a good dude, Matt. Even if you're wearing a Miami football throwball jersey on right now.
This is not a Miami throwball jersey. Let me throw this down earlier.
Oh, it's
earlier
a San Diego Loyal. That's rad. Short may they live.
Yes, but I appreciate you seeing orange and green and then immediately assuming things. That was a good quality of mind to then make an assumption about. Maybe, Mark, then I need to reevaluate my joke from a couple of weeks ago saying that you were the Rob McElhenney to my Ryan Reynolds, because then I think you're implying then here that maybe I do more than my fair share of the work when it comes to the podcast, and I'm also the better looking one. I don't think either of those are offensive or inaccurate statements as well. So I did have a listener reach out, Mark, and kind of ask the question, Rabbi, are you caught up on Welcome to Wrexham? Not tonight, but as of last week.
I am not. I haven't watched any of it. I'm still recover. I'm still trying to catch up on all the TV. The annoying thing about the Jewish high holidays is that not only do they put me under work-wise, but they, like, all the good TV dropped all at the same time. So thanks for reminding me that there's a whole new series, season of Wrexham. Me and my kid are catching up on Ahsoka, the new Star Wars series on Disney Plus. So we're making our way through it. Go, you can drop spoilers. I don't mind. I know what happens at the end of the season, Matt. It's fine.
At the end of Ahsoka? Okay.
So no, at the end of this is like a bit we're doing. We're constantly confused. No, at the end of Wrexham.
Okay, yes. But so there's a question mark. As you'll see, there's an incident that we have between Humphrey, who's the Liver Pudlian, who was a showrunner on Always Sunny. He's the one with the long hair and the glasses.
Sure.
And then there's the, I can't remember if he's the technical director or the president. I can't remember his name, but he's the bald one with the glasses as well. The very serious technical directory.
He was
type
in the first
well.
Season.
Yes. And so then there's the question of, there was a listener who reached out and asked the question, which one of us was which? And I said that I was the more technical person and that I was aware of the irony that I am picking the old, wrinkly, bald as me being it and you being the more, the one with the better hair to say. But I was also going to say, Mark, then if you're catching up on Ahsoka, then you did not catch my reference when I mentioned in the rundown intro that you lack conviction. You have not gotten that far. Yes.
I have not gotten that.
Okay. Mark, get ready for your mind to be blown on so many things when it gets to episode 5.
Awesome.
Let's get into this, Mark. Turning back to the actual soccer front, there's a really good article, listeners, from Jonathan Taylor Tannenwald, friend of the show, JTT. You may be familiar with him. He writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer, covers the Philadelphia Union, covers the U.S. men's national team. I think both national teams, now that I think about it. And American soccer in general. And Mark, Andre Blake, goalkeeper for the Philadelphia Union, went off with some quotes commenting on the fixture congestion, about how the players aren't being looked after, how many games there were, how many double game weeks and 3 games in 8 calendar days that you've had throughout the season, that being a response to MLS no longer wanting to play during the international breaks as much. Obviously, then there's the huge month-ish long break for the League's Cup as well, where league play can't resume until after League's Cup is over. And then on top of that, front-loading the schedule so that you've got time for our wonky Frankenstein-ish playoff format that we have. This is something that has been a sore spot for me, Mark. I mentioned, you know, in June before we got to that international break, and then finally when we got to the break for League's Cup, of how exhausted I am. I've heard from other staff around other MLS clubs and the Rapids as well, not just technical people, people in digital, people in marketing, people in ticket sales, people in game operations as well, that it's exhausting when you have, like, you know, so many breaks. You know, you have a couple weeks off to go into League's Cup. You have a couple weeks off when the team did not make it out of the group in League's Cup, but then you immediately go back to it Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Some of that is due to the rescheduling that has happened because of the 3 lightninged out games that we have. And all of this, Mark, to then have, you know, a condensed regular season, players dealing with injury, all these other issues as well, to then have 9 out of 14 teams in a conference make the playoffs and then have a bunch of playoffs congested as well, all in the name of having more money and having more games for Apple TV to show on their platforms and everything. I do not think that as pro player, I don't like it, Mark. I am burnt out. I have been counting the days for 2 or 3 months now, Mark, to October 21st. There will be a relieved and exhausted Matt Pollard at Burgundy Affair on October 22nd when the season is finally over and I don't have to constantly think about what I am doing this Wednesday and Saturday and next Wednesday and Saturday. What say you, Rabbi Mark Goodman?
Yeah, I'm less concerned about the podcasters and more concerned about the players. I think there's I had two tweets today and they both kind of went viral. I mean, at least as much as my tweets go viral. And the one about fixture congestion was one of them. It's the other one was just about the whether the supporter shield or whether MLS Cup is more meaningful.
MLS Cup is more meaningful.
You're wrong. This season, it's supporters shield because everybody makes the playoffs. Except the Rapids and Toronto, everybody else gets to make the playoffs. But back to the original, back to the matter at hand, precision is decision and something on command or something like that. I forget how the hip-hop lyric goes. But anyways, yeah, I think the players are exhausted. I mean, that was what Andre Blake was saying. I think the quality of the games goes down. I think teams are trying to figure out, like, what do we do to keep things exciting and fresh. I think the best teams are their managers are just rolling out players who are, you know, kind of like, I mean, the thing is, in terms of, like, if you look at every player's minutes played, it doesn't look dramatic. It doesn't look different. There's 3,060 minutes in a 34-game season to play, and I know that because Keegan Rosenberry has played 3,060 minutes, I think, twice for the Rapids. If there were more minutes to play, Keegan would have played them. But this season, there's more because, of course, there's U.S. Open Cup. Of course, there's playoffs. There's also Leagues Cup. There was also Campeones' Cup, apparently, the other day for LAFC. And that's just an absolute metric ton of soccer, and there's too much of it. And you need to rotate players. The rosters aren't big enough. Although even if they were big enough, the rosters aren't deep enough to rotate all those players. Like the Rapids roster has 30 players on it, but like there's only like 24 or 26 guys who've actually played. If you're not counting guys who've come in or out of the team or guys who are, you know, suspended for, pending investigations in foreign countries.
But are posting on their Instagram about how they're back in Denver and they've been back in Denver.
I know, that's a heartbreak, right? We're talking about Max, if you're newish to the podcast. And if you're really newish to the Colorado Rapids, why you would have joined watching the Rapids in the middle of this season of all seasons, and then why you would join this podcast at this time of year, I don't know. But I always want to reach out to folks who may be listening, who may never have listened to us before. But if you're unaware of this, the Colorado Rapids have a player who was suspended for being involved in a betting scandal with Brazilian gamblers over late match red yellow cards. So anyways, we're waiting for the Brazilian police to put that one to trial so that we might decide whether we still have a player or not. Yeah.
Fun fact about that, Mark. Max is still technically on yellow card accumulation watch.
Oh my God.
So if suddenly he were to be released from whatever league stuff is coming up and then reinstated by, I don't know that he's ever been like removed from it, but like if ever he were to be back in the team and allowed to contribute and all this stuff were to be cleared up and he goes in and gets a yellow card for which he supposedly or accusedly received $12,000 for subbing into a game and then getting a yellow card against the LA Galaxy, he would be suspended for yellow card accumulation, Mark.
So anyways, to finish the thought, point one, I'm worried that players are getting overused because of, especially the Leagues Cup. I mean, like, you know, that was a tournament also where you play two matches, and then if you win, you might wind up with, I think, three total more matches or four total more matches. That's a lot, you know, that's a lot of matches. And then, I mean, Inter-Miami is really the team that's, like, taking it on the chin the most. They went all the way in U.S. Open Cup. They went all the way in Leagues Cup. And we'll see if they make the playoffs. But the second issue is the meaninglessness, which kind of coincides with the regular season playoff berth question that I also tweeted about, which is if you're going to play a 34-game season and then 9 out of 14 teams in one conference, 9 out of 15 teams in the other conference make the playoffs, what was the point of those 34 games? Like, almost everybody makes it, so why bother? So I think, you know, like, that's the thing, is that, like, the meaninglessness of the churn is really bad. I had a number of possible solutions. My favorite personal solution is to cut the regular season down to 30 games and then count the stats that are accumulated in the playoffs as part of the regular season stats for, like, the Golden Boot. And it's slightly unfair. Like, if you're the best goal scorer on the worst team in the league and you don't make the playoffs, then you miss out on 2, 3, 4 games to score goals. But personally, that makes the most sense to me. And also, if you look at the way other leagues kind of calculate goals, they don't really care that much. I mean, if you look, you know, in the English Premier League, like, what do you count a player's goals as being? You know, like Leo Messi is a great example, you know, back when he played for Barcelona. He had a season where he scored some unbelievable number of goals, like 70 goals. And he scored like 60 of them in the league. And he scored 12 of them in Champions League. And he scored, or it was like 54 in the league and 12 in the Champions League and 6 for Argentina and 4 in the, like, you know, the Corona del whatever the heck they call the Spanish cup.
Copa del Rey.
Yeah, whatever, something like that. Yeah. So anyways, point being, like, so did he score 76 goals or did he score 58 goals or did he score, like, you know, so those kind of Golden Bootiness questions are always kind of up there and they don't really matter that much. Anyways, point being, yes, I'm with you. It's hard to pay attention to this phase of the game. Also, as we were talking about before we started recording, you know, like, I'm a soccer fan and my mind is wandering too. I went to watch the UCL at a local pub. I watched UEFA Champions League and it was a lot of fun. And it's really great to start thinking about, like, how's Arsenal doing and what's going on in the English Premier League and all these other things. And it's like, well, MLS is still going and not in a section of the MLS season that's actually interesting. So,
yeah, no, well said, Mark. And I did find that stats breakdown for you, Rabbi. So it was the 2011-2012 season in which Messi scored 73 goals. He scored 50 goals in 37 appearances in La Liga. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
In the, this is National Cup, so that's got to be Copa del Rey. So 3 goals in 7. In Champions League, he scored 14 in 11.
That was a pretty good guess by me. I think when I figured it out, I was like, it was like 76 goals and 54 in one and 12 in the other. And I was like, wow, I accidentally got that pretty right.
Your price is right ballparking it, certainly, Mark. And then others, so I'm not sure. I don't know if there were friendlies in this one, maybe. Maybe this is counting preseason. Maybe they were in. I don't know if Spain has an equivalent to the Community Shield or something like that, or if they were in the Club World Cup, but then he had 6 goals in 5 other competition or 5 other appearances in other competitions that weren't domestic league, domestic cup, international continental club competition. So that's ridiculous. But yeah, no, I don't really have a good solution on this one, Mark. I don't mind your idea of cutting down the number of games, but I think that just further dilutes the supporter shield. And I think at that point, if you're cutting it down to 30 games, then I think you basically have to eliminate cross-conference play. You can't accurately have everybody do home and away to have a fair structure in terms of the who you're competing with for playoff seeding and playoff appearances. I think you could reformat stuff from an Open Cup standpoint, Mark, that maybe simplifies the number of those games, maybe have, but then ultimately what you're doing there is, the answer to there is create less Open Cup games for MLS teams, so less MLS or fewer rounds that an MLS team has to go through, and then fundamentally you're making it a more MLS-heavy schedule by the time those MLS teams enter as well. I would be in favor of expanding the roster, Mark, or at the very least changing the rules around that as well. So, you know, you've got, you know, right now there's, you know, you can have 4 players that are with the MLS Next Pro team come up and play 4 times throughout the entire season. I would almost expand that. The Premier League has done that similarly. Granted, what they count in terms of domestic players to try and promote domestic development is kind of the same kind of idea of what MLS is trying to do, but completely different format because they don't have international roster spots and all that stuff. So I would maybe revamp that a little bit, Mark. I would also wonder at what point, like, could the Open Cup look at this and say, hey, any player who's been with the academy for at least 2 years can come up and play in two or three games as well. So effectively, you maybe have a situation where it's Hailstorm versus like the Rapids U20 team as well to cut down on those number of games as well. And MLS is kind of in a bit of a pickle here because because you're trying to increase the value of a congested regular season versus, so in order to do that, then the regular season has to matter more, so then you have to increase the playoff field, but thus increase the number of games you have for the playoffs. There's no other league in the entire world that has to deal with the compounding complexity of there's a playoff format that begins after all of the league play is already over, and then how do you schedule that so that you don't have a ridiculously long offseason for the teams that don't make the playoffs, which is right around a third of the teams in the league, but then also have basically the shortest and a extremely inconveniently short offseason for the teams that make it all the way to MLS Cup. And I don't really have a good answer for that, and I think right now, Mark, MLS is trying to have its cake and eat it too, and we'll see what happens with this playoff format and everything. But I'm going to be honest with you, Rabbi, if Miami doesn't make it, I'll probably pick like one game or one matchup from each round that I think is interesting, or I'll have to have like Extra Time or Total Soccer Show convince me that it's interesting. I'll see you guys in the conference finals, to be honest, and you might not see me from MLS Cup until MLS Cup. And so that's really disappointing as someone who is certainly an MLS sicko. We've talked about the players, we've talked about the league and the financial implications, Mark, and then certainly from a media standpoint, and I've left out the fans so far. Mark, the most recent two Wednesday games that the Rapids had that already had the kids back in school, so they were school nights, you had right around 12,000 people at each of those games. You've had 16,000 the last couple of home games that took place on a Saturday, and then this past Saturday for Austin FC, you had 15,931, so right under 16,000 as well. So I have to wonder, given that MLS has prioritized also the having similar kickoff times and then fewer Sunday games. Obviously, you're either playing on Wednesday if you're playing midweek, or you're playing on Saturday if you're playing on the weekend as well. How much of this is hurting teams at the gate, which we know is still a significant revenue store for most teams, including the Colorado Rapids? The fact that you're getting 4,000 fewer people, you know, from February, March, April, into May, until really school gets out and the weather gets warm and, you know, all the other sports teams stop playing in Colorado. How much is that hurting you? You want to load up with Wednesday, Saturday on June, July, and the late part of May, from like, let's say, the week before Memorial Day to the week before Labor Day. I can be convinced of that, even with Leagues Cup. But if I'm being honest with you, Marcus, all of this worth having Leagues Cup and all that chaos it was? Not for me. So if you're asking me what's the lowest hanging fruit that I want to get rid of, I would simplify Leagues Cup. I would have qualification for Leagues Cup, and then the MLS teams that I would almost say, like, you have to be a playoff team. And then all the non-playoff teams can play their non-playoff team games in the regular season during Leagues Cup, I feel like would be a possible solution there. That's all I got on that. Mark, shall we get to the actual Rapids soccering?
Not bad. That's a pretty good idea. Let's talk about actual soccer instead of theoretical soccer or the number of matches that should be played or not. Let's talk about a soccer game that was actually played.
Yeah, listeners, not going to do a full rundown. Obviously, the Rapids are already out of the playoffs. They were, you know, out of the playoffs since our last podcast that we had, obviously. So I'll run down the goals, and then we'll talk about big takeaways that we've had from it to the extent that they're relevant in the context of going into next season. So Mark, we'll start with this past Wednesday, 2-2 draw with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Laborda, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, with kind of a really good effort off of a broken down play on a corner in the 11th minute. That makes it 1-0. Some decent changes from the Rapids at halftime. Won't go over them at this moment. You can look them up, listeners. But Diego Rubio on an outstretched ball after a really bad shot from him initially on a cross from Calvin Harris 2 minutes into the second half. That makes it 1-1. 20 minutes later, Cole Bassett with a direct header off of a set piece from Connor Ronan to make it 2-1. and then Vancouver turns it on, Mark, and it is Brian White on a corner in the 78th minute to make it a 2-2 draw. I think a fair result on the whole, Mark. I think certainly an improvement for me in that I don't think the Rapids were as turgid in the first half, and then they actually did wake up, and as Cole Bassett's been lamenting, they normally don't do that until the 65th minute. We saw that from the 46th, from Chris Little's men. Mark, start with your good things.
Which game are we talking about to start?
Vancouver.
That's what I thought. This was a game that I only got to see the highlights of because this game happened, I think, the day after Yom Kippur? So I was totally wiped out. What did I notice about this game? Well, the guys had fight. Bassett's, it was a header to finish things off. That was a really nice goal. I just think overall they were just kind of in it, you know, like there was the way they play under Chris Little is different than they've been playing before. There seems to be possession with purpose. There seems to be attention to focusing on transition and not getting caught out. They seem to be capable of going nose to nose. The flip side of that is I think that the Vancouver was a little sloppy, but as a team. But overall, you know, I think that the finishing was probably the most exciting thing about this game. Just the ability for these guys who have been missing the target all season long to finally hit the target was really, really exciting. And I think, and I guess the last thing I'll say about a good thing is other than the fact of Bassett's really great headed goal was the fact that he scored a goal when it really mattered. You know, that this is a team that has fallen behind all season, and then it was kind of like, oh well, there's no point in watching. They're not going to score. They're not going to level it. And here was one where they were down early. They scored to level it up. Then they went ahead, and it was like, what? We have a lead? That's crazy. All right, Matt, go ahead. What are your good things?
We'll start with the halftime changes, as I mentioned it, Mark. First of all, I did not think Kevin Cabral did a whole lot in that first half, listeners. And then so Calvin Harris comes in for him in the 46th, or the start of the second half, and then it was Luis Diaz who came in for Brian Galvan. Mark, I think our take that Luis Diaz is a younger international version of Jonathan Lewis, who's a bit of a speed merchant, I think has proven to be accurate. I think he did a lot of really good things in creating and starting danger from a transition period in the second half, but not a lot when it comes to the actual final third, finishing in the box either with the final pass or the actual final shot. Granted, again, he hasn't played a whole lot for Columbus. He didn't actually come into the Rapids on a glowing run of form. There's a reason that Columbus Crew decided to waive him. There's a reason the Rapids were taking a flyer on someone when they couldn't acquire another player by any other means because the window had closed. But and then also, Mark, we saw that Moise Bombito and Keegan Rosenberry, I think Keegan was the fullback. Let me confirm that. They switched sides. So Moise was initially on the left with Keegan on the right, and they switched it over where Keegan was on the right. Keegan was on the left, and then Moise was on the right. And I thought Bombito and Harris did a really good job with them together, Mark. Andrew Gutman was not available to this game due to the ankle injury that he sustained from the tackle from Felipe Mora that could have been a red card up in Portland. But I thought they did a really good job. Good on Calvin Harris, Mark, to create danger 2 minutes in to that second half, and for Diego Rubio to finally finish as well. And Mark, I think we're going to officially coin something, the Chris Little effect, from the new coach bump that we've seen from the Rapids. This is a term that Braden Norse over from Denver Sports Magazine came up with. Follow Braden on, let's look up Braden's Twitter and then actually call that out, Mark. Let's give him some credit because he came up with this along Press Row. Waiting for the Twitter app to load. So at Braden Norse, B-R-A-I-D-O-N-N-O-U-R-S-E. On the last name. And so we can Chris Little effect Mark in terms of we've seen Cole Bassett, I think, have the shackles off for him and him play a little bit more free. I think we can say that we've seen an improved Ralph Priso, albeit mostly as a substitute under Chris Little. Moise Bombido getting opportunities as well in a few different roles in the back. Certainly he's looked better as well. Mark, we'll come onto this when we talk about the Austin game, but I think Andreas Maxu has been better since the coaching change as well. And then Calvin Harris continues to have, you know, incremental ascendancy within the club and in terms of his performances as well. And I don't think there's any more good stat to represent that, Mark, in terms of the Rapids being harder to beat and being having the freedom to go create danger in transition and that leading to goal scoring opportunities, than the stat that as of the Cole Bassett goal against Vancouver, that made it 7 goals in 4 games. Mark, in the previous, you'd have to go back 15 league games to find 7 goals scored combined. So you're talking about almost half of a season in that middle half, middle third, that the Rapids went a 15 game stretch where they scored 7 goals and they then scored 7 goals in 4 games. Now talking 8-5 if we're including the win over Austin as well. I think Dallas is a worse team than Houston. Let's say beat Dallas, draw to Houston this week, and then beat RSL. Should Chris Little be in consideration for the open head coaching spot?
All right, so I'll answer that question, but I want a correction for the record, which is I did watch this game. That's crazy. I'm looking at the highlights and I'm like, no, I watched that game. I was just really tired, and I don't remember it very well. I think any week where we have 2 games in a row is always hard to kind of pull up. But
another reason to not have so much fixture congestion to the Apple TV and MLSsoccer.com suits that are certainly listening to this podcast.
I don't have
these games are bleeding together. I cannot remember them. It is exhausting to have to go double game week stacked on double game week. There's no time for the soccer to breathe, for the fans, the media, or the players. Rabbi, you were saying.
And to that point, like, I think, you know, more important than that was, like, I'm going to do a bad thing and then we'll go back to your question about Chris Little. But, like, my bad thing was nobody was at this game. You look at the crowd and it was, like, really sparse. And I think the people calling the match were trying to find ways of ignoring that inconvenient fact. I think also the video guys, the camera operators, we're doing a lot of, like, you know, they do the Apple does a thing like, you know, supporters cam or something like that. And, like, you know, usually the supporters cam for LAFC is like a huge wide shot of the 3252 just going crazy. Or in Austin, it's all those dudes with the light up neon drums and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, there's a shot of 50 guys, you know, going off. The supporters cam photos at Colorado Rapids, I think this one specifically was of 3 kids. It was a very tight shot because you don't want to show all those empty seats. And also,
or the banners.
That was the other thing I was going to say, which was, you know, if you look at the highlights of this game, of the Vancouver game, if you look at the highlights of the last game we played against Austin, like, the announcers are not explaining what's going on because it says the fans deserve better and all the other things, of course. At the end in 117, and they don't say anything. And so you just have to either, you know, if you know, you know. Like, if you know what's going on, you know, because the announcers are just pretending like it's not happening. But anyways, back to the question at hand. Chris Little, does he have a shot at head manager? I actually think he's got a pretty good one at this point. A lot of people are talking about Eric Boucher as being a possibility because of the season that he is having with Rapids 2. I'll just be honest. I interacted with and interviewed Eric Boucher once. I was going to do an article on him as the Rapids U23 coach back in the day when we had a U23. But he was also at the time the U20 coach. I don't remember how it was broken down back then. And it was one of those things, I don't know how many of you of these things you've done, Matt, where you go out and you do an interview and you have an article in mind. And when you're done with the interview, you take a look at what you're doing the interview and it's not going very well and nothing's really happening. And you go home to review the tape and you get nothing and you go, I have nothing to write.
And so you either write a fluff piece because you have to, or you come up with some other way of making an article out of that, or you just put it in a drawer and call it. I have an article that I started when the team wasn't completely irrelevant about what it's like going on the road in Major League Soccer. And the article neither came out very well, nor did anyone care about what it's like to be a Rapids player on a road trip over the last couple months. And so that is in a drawer. I'm going to use it as like evergreen content in January as an interesting article. That one's going to be fun also because it's the only article I've ever done where I had the team. Emilio, who works for the Colorado Rapids, went out and translated an entire interview of questions that I gave him for Michael Barrios. So it's the first time we've ever used a Spanish translation for an article that we'll be doing for the HDHL Substack, but also no one cares. But anyways, my point is that when I interviewed Eric Boucher, I didn't really get a lot off him, and I got a sense of a guy who was kind of like two-dimensional and not particularly exciting. So to me, he doesn't feel like he's in the running. Little though, he feels like he's doing exciting things. He sounds when I get to talk to you about what he's been like in the post game, it sounds like he's an interesting kind of intelligent kind of consumer and a player of soccer. I think the only question with Chris Little is about forming team identity. So far, what I see is he's been a very practical guy. He sees players who are best used in certain positions, and therefore he has put them there. You know, he's dropped Cole Bassett back into kind of a really classic number eight position. He's not pushing Bassett up as much, and he's not making him play as wide as much. Or if he is making him play wide, it's because the entire team is shifting over to his side. I've seen a few different things on set pieces. Not a lot, but a little bit. It just feels like there's more juice to the team, and that definitely feels like the Chris Little effect. So I would say this. I think he's... You're going to probably disagree with this. That's okay. I would say he's the odds on... I wouldn't say he's the favorite, but like if you were handicapping it like a horse race, I'd put him at 4-1, and I wouldn't put anybody else in the running any higher than 5-1, 10-1, 20-1, or 50-1. You know, like Pep Guardiola is, you know, in there at 1,000-1, but he's on the board. So that's where I'm at. Matt, bad thing, and your thoughts on Chris Little becoming the permanent coach next year?
I want more data. I think the club has time. As I reported, I got a bit of a scoop last week, Mark.
Scoop!
You know, which was that I think this was, whenever I tweeted, I think it was last week, it might have been the week before, I can't remember, that the club was in the process of wrapping up the first round of interviews. And so just based on my conjecture, Mark, based on how these hirings have taken with some of the timelines that I've understood in the past, I think it is plausible that they're down to, I think they're ready to announce a head coach right at the week after the season ends, but I think certainly plausibly they should be down to their last couple of candidates as well. I do not believe, Mark, we will not be waiting for mid-December for a head coach to officially be announced unless like extraneous circumstances come to this point. So far, I haven't seen enough from Chris Little to say that he should be a favorite. I also think there's been enough of a bump, and I do think he has enough of a pedigree as an assistant, and given what he did that was good in Seattle and how much good we've seen in terms of people in Seattle that then even go do other things as well, that he certainly should be in the running. One of those coaches who should have been interviewed in that first round should have been one Chris Little. He also followed me on Twitter this week, Mark, so I'll give him bonus points for that. Last thing that I'll have to say on this one, Mark, or two bad things. Both goals the Rapids conceded were on set pieces. Cole Bassett kind of said it rather bluntly post-game that for as much as they practice set pieces, attacking and defending-wise, they shouldn't be conceding that much as well. I think it increasingly is valid to question what's going on with that, Mark. Is that an effort issue? Is that a execution issue? Are they not practicing as much? Or with how much we've talked about in the past about Chris Sharpie being the set piece guru of has some of the shine come off of him? And I think for me in that regard, yes, though I wouldn't say that about him as the goalkeeper coach, both at the academy level and then at the first team level. And then I got confirmation, Mark, after the game. This was the second game in a row that Tavares had missed. This was now four games in a row. He has not gotten 90 minutes. The first two, he was subbed out once at halftime and once in the first half for sickness, and then he missed the game against Portland and then missed the two games that we're talking about now from last week as well, also due to sickness. I thought it was interesting, Mark, that it's only been in the last two games now that he's officially been listed on the availability report. I did get confirmation, Rabbi, that that if it was COVID, it would have been, he would have been listed as health and safety protocol, not illness in parentheses. So I don't have any other information on that. I don't know what the, it has to be something significant, Mark, if we're going on 2 to 3 weeks as well. On that, maybe he's got a really bad stomach bug. I don't want to speculate beyond that. But I do think this is starting to derail the opportunity that he had to come in and kind of use these games, even if they were irrelevant, to get settled and then be completely acclimated going into next preseason. And I am worried between his sickness and Tavares not looking particularly good for me, Mark, and then Navajo, who I think has been really good between the boxes with what's been asked of him, but obviously hasn't done it in the final third. I'm concerned that those two players playing their way into then be ready to give us hope for next season, that this is an opportunity that's squandered because Navajo hasn't scored and because Tavares is missing games, to where effectively, Navajo's going to come in with the weight of needing to score because he hadn't scored in next season, and Tavares effectively being a new signing because of how little he's actually been able to play on the pitch this season. And does that give me concerns about, these two need to hit the ground running, I think, in order to validate the valuations that the clubs put on them for the purchase options to really be convinced of picking those up in July, and certainly doing that under a new manager if it's not Chris Little, who's back with the club next season. Let's move on to the Austin game, Mark. Just one goal to talk about. 41st minute, Andreas Maxiu, nice little shoving match in the box, and then a nice finish off of his foot, making up for a miss that he had against Vancouver that actually could have won it as well. Clean sheet, Mark, just the second one that Marco Ilicha has gotten in MLS play. You'd have to go back to the home game against San Jose. That was the Bombito soft second yellow card game. So lots of really good ducks that were broken in this one, Mark. Rapids get a win. Rapids get a win at home. Rapids get a clean sheet at home. Andreas Maxiu, good performance and a goal. And I think we have to start off, Mark, I'll throw it to you. Sebastian Anderson, his first start since Robin Fraser's first game in charge for the club over four calendar years ago. 90 minutes, clean sheet, did not look out of place. Yay, Sebi.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, man, that was really great. I mean, I was sad for the last year or two that he really didn't get a shot, and I didn't know why. He didn't do great, when he came on as a 17-year-old, But I kind of thought, you know, like he was in the doghouse for a long time, or on the bench for a long time. To be fair, Keegan Rosenberry is spectacular. So, and he really does the job that the team has always needed him to do perfectly, which is they've always had a kind of a bomb at forward left back. So Rosenberry has always been an get up and down kind of guy and a more defensive guy. The other thing that Rosenberry could always do is do a passable impersonation of a center back. So he could kind of slide over and do that work. So that's why Anderson wasn't on the starting lineup for a long time, probably as much as he had some work to do developmental wise, but he looked good. He didn't look out of place. I thought he had a good match, and I think the most important thing for a fullback, or the most important thing for defenders, in a good game for them, is if you don't notice them. And I didn't really notice him that much. I didn't notice him on the ball that much either, which is less encouraging, but that's okay. I would say kind of my overall on this game, if we're going to do kind of a wraparound good thing, bad thing, big thing, just really quickly, was it was pretty boring. I mean, the Makhchu goal was a good opportunity. You know, basically all corners are equal opportunities for goals. And if you have enough, if you can put anywhere between 6 and 10 corners up in a game, you should get a goal out of one of them. So the fact that we did get a goal out of that one of those is great. And then the fact that we didn't concede any other goals to Austin was good. I thought Austin looked pretty bad. I've watched them pretty consistently for the last three seasons. I've watched a lot more Austin games than almost any other team. This season, the only team I've watched more than Austin is Miami, for obvious reasons. And also, in general, I watch Columbus a lot, for personal rooting sake and also time zone sensibility.
They're the most fun. Columbus is the most fun watchable team in MLS right now, Mark. If I was introducing someone new to Major League Soccer, the three teams that I would show them in this order would be Miami, Columbus, Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I watched them was because I previewed them for Pittsburgh Soccer Now the week we played them in the Open Cup. So I watched like two games of them before that game. Then I was live here to watch them play Open Cup. Then I drove out a couple weeks later with Etta to go see them play in Columbus. And, you know, because I had seen them a couple times at that point, I watched a couple games when they popped on. So I've probably seen like 6 or 7 of their games. Anyways, Austin is like a distant fourth in terms of teams in MLS I've watched. But they just don't look good. I mean, there's something wrong with that team. Driussi looks kind of aimless or cooked or tired or whatever. There's a whole bunch of other players. Alexander Ring, who has been a fantastic player in Major League Soccer for a very long time, he's not covering ground as much. He's kind of there defensively, but he's not as much of a fulcrum or a pass between kind of moving the ball back up the field. They're wide players who were a mess 2 years ago, and then were great last year, are a mess again. Gallagher is their kind of best player right now. John Gallagher, who it's spelled Gallagher, but it's really confusing. Can people in Major League Soccer start having names that are pronounced exactly as they're spelled? Rafael Navajo. Anyway, I'm just
you done messed that. Up, AA Ron.
I'm gonna meet Navajo, and he's gonna be like, so you have a problem with my name? No. So yeah, that's my only take, is that the Rapids did win this game. They looked solid, but not spectacular. They didn't look super great, and Austin looked bad. And so it's kind of like limited input as to like what it all means vis-a-vis Chris Little, what it means for the Rapids. Although I will say the Rapids are 2 wins, 2 losses and a draw in their last 5 games. That's crazy. That feels like, it feels like we're having one of those bizarre, you know, end of season renaissances, just the same way we did when Connor Casey took over the team after Anthony Hudson was fired. So that's kind of cool. Matt, what are your thoughts on this match?
point, Mark, I do think we have to put a grain of salt on this win. I would say to double down on my good thing, Mark, about the Chris Little effect. You know, I think now, you know, a 5-game sample size, I think, is decent. The Rapids, I think, have played 2 great teams, 2 decent teams, 1 bad team. And then the form behind those teams has kind of also informed what went on in terms of the result. 2 great teams that they played. Home to New England Revolution, who were in a state of chaos. That was a game that a team trying to stabilize itself should have won. The Rapids won it. They were playing Seattle, who I think form-wise for their expectations were okay, but they're a great team. The Rapids did not play well. The Rapids lost in that one. They've played an average team in Portland that was in the ascendancy. I think that was like their 5th win in a row under their interim head coach. Rapids lost. It was a close game. Could have gone either way. I can forgive. I can accept that result given that the performance was improved as well. And then you're talking about a good team that was on another average team similar to Portland, Mark, but was on a down run of form at the end of a long road trip as well. And the Rapids got a draw in that one where they didn't play particularly well. And then now you play a below average, you know, a bad team that was certainly circling the drain. And the Rapids were the ones that I think now all but mathematically flushed Austin down into the new New York sewers where the Rapids and Toronto FC are currently only occupying, Mark. But if you're just looking at stabilizing, beat a bad team at home, beat a good team in a bad run of form, lost to a good team, a great team on a good run of form, an average team on a great run of form, drew an average team on an average run of form. That's stable. That's mid-level, Mark. So to your point, I think it's 1.4 points per game now that they have. And if you look at it, Mark, 1.4 points per game, you know, extrapolated out to a 34-game season, that gets you in the playoffs. That has you where, you know, if you go on a good run of form to end the season, that gets you a home playoff game in that first round proper. That's pretty darn good. So I agree with you in that regard, but I do think we have to take this win a little bit with a grain of salt, Mark, because of the opponent, the fact that Sebastian Driussi wasn't playing.
Yeah, I want to say that was a correction I made. I said, he didn't have a good game. And I was like, yeah, he really didn't have a good game
because he has a
side adductor injury that has kept him out of the last 4 matches, which I guess I didn't notice. But, you know, it was interesting because, there were just kind of these anonymous, like, dudes floating around and nobody was really doing anything particularly impressive for Austin, and so I didn't bother to catch all their anonymous names. I assumed Driussi was one of those anonymous dudes not doing much, but turns out he was anonymously lying in the trainer's room getting worked on, so...
A player who was on the field who was anonymous, Mark, was Ragone. As much as Rapids fans want to complain about Kevin Cabral and him being a bust and him not performing, and the Rapids gave up too much and are paying too much as well, Mark, like, Ragone, the Austin fans are done and have been done with him as well. And so as soon as I saw that, Mark, where I thought Austin was getting into good areas, but then serving the ball into Ragone, and then the Rapids were dealing with it, or Ragone wasn't doing anything, I was like, okay, I'm not particularly threatened by this. If there was one bad thing, Mark, in which I think it's fair to say from the sequence in the 71st minute that at points throughout that entire sequence, you can call out the entire back line and Marko Ilicha as in they could have dealt with it particularly better. There's a point where a ball gets cleared on, I think, a second ball in from Andreas Makshu, and Makshu clears it, and then Sebastian Anderson is kind of having a positioning battle and then a little bit of upper body physicality with an Austin player, and he doesn't deal with that particularly well. Bombito doesn't track 2 runners particularly well, and then on the really good opportunity that Ilicha makes a save, you've got Andrew Gutman, who is back in with the team, who was just caught ball watching on the back post, and that's not the first time we've seen that as well, Mark. I think Gutman was certainly very at fault for the first goal that was conceded against Portland as well, but the Rapids ended up surviving, and ironically, Mark, a player who I always remember as being an absolute Rapids killer, the best opportunity goes to Will Bruin, and he skies it over the ball, so credit to Will Bruin for pulling a Ragone Cabral on that situation. Otherwise, maybe we're not talking about this game and this week, Mark, as so flowery in that regard, but I want to look big picture as well, Mark. Again, no Tavares in this game. Navajo doing a lot of really good things, not being particularly goal dangerous in the final third. When he has been, it's usually him creating something out of nothing in transition, and I thought he's done a decent job of that. but just the it's not leading to high quality opportunities on goal. And you can't validate a guy being worth $4.5 million if that's not happening. There's a lot of stuff around him that's not helping him, Mark. So he is starved in a desert, and he is trying to squeeze some water out of a dried up dead cactus at this point. And so I'm not questioning the effort or the intention or the energy that he has brought to this in ways that I have with other new signings with the team at times this season. But Mark, let's look at this from a big picture standpoint. We now have the Vancouver game was the game in hand that the Rapids had, and then so now we have it. Both Toronto and Colorado both have three games left. The Rapids are obviously away this week to the two other Texas teams, FC Dallas tomorrow, and then Houston on Saturday, and then Decision Day they're hosting Real Salt Lake in the third and irrelevant leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup. Toronto's remaining schedule, Mark, tomorrow they are at Charlotte, who are fighting for the playoff lives. On Saturday, they are at New York Red Bulls, who, let me check the standings to see if Red Bulls are in the tank as well. Both Charlotte.
Yeah, they're in bad shape. Mark Fishkin, who I like on Twitter, if you're into all things Red Bull and Metro, noted that they're in a position where they have if Red Bull lose and X happens or X happens, they're eliminated. They have a couple of permutations like that. So they're in bad shape. They're in 12th place right now.
So just like all the teams that the Rapids are playing right now, Mark, where we're talking about Portland, you talk about Austin, you talk about Vancouver, those teams look at the Rapids being like, this is our most winnable game left. We have to win this game in order to secure our position. Charlotte and New York Red Bulls are looking at this. Basically, it is a must win for them, given where they are on the table and given the weakness of Toronto FC. And then they close out the season, Mark. They are hosting Orlando City on Decision Day. Who knows whether or not Orlando will be competing for seeding at that point. They are currently second in the Eastern Conference, but New England does have a game in hand, and were New England to win that, they would jump Orlando, and Orlando would move down to third. So, Mark, I'm going to say it with what we're about to talk about in a minute about FC Dallas. I do think the Rapids have the easier schedule remaining in this regard, but I don't know that it matters, Mark, because they've got 4 points. I don't know that I see Toronto. I think Toronto's ceiling for these three games is 4 points if they're lucky. I could easily see them getting two or fewer. Mark, I think in 3 weeks' time when we look back on this, if we're talking about the Rapids finishing second to last in the Supporters Shield, we will look back at this past week being the week that the Rapids successfully avoided the Wooden Spoon. Your thoughts?
I think so, too. I mean, Toronto looked pretty awful, and the Rapids look lively. I watched that game against Cincinnati, and boy, they just collapsed. I mean, Toronto, you know, they were down 2-0. It looked pointless. Then they got two goals to end the half, and it was really exciting. And then the whole second half, they just looked very flabby and incapable. They've had so much trouble with Insigne and Bernadeschi at training, leading to the firing of Bob Bradley. Of course, that's not real helpful when Bob Bradley's son is the team's talisman and, you know, kind of like legendary, you know, person. I mean, Michael Bradley has been trending down for a long time in terms of his capability, but the old man still stands in. He's kind of like Andrea Pirlo in his later days, where he's in the center of the pitch. He's commanding the ball around the field. He doesn't have the same movement, but you're not going to replace him with anybody who can do what he does. So that's kind of what's going on with Toronto. On the flip side, like Austin is hard up against it. They're playing a number of teams coming up that, you know, are doing better than them and making a lot of waves. They've got DC United coming up, who are fighting for a playoff spot. LAFC, who are in fourth place and, you know, really looking for a better position to end the season. And then they finish up with San Jose, who I love watching San Jose. I love paying attention to San Jose, and San Jose looks like a solid bet to make the playoffs this year. So just some thoughts about Austin. I don't know why that interests me, but, you know, like you could do that with everybody that the Rapids are playing or that Toronto is playing, as you did, which is how much motivation do these guys have? I think at the end of the day, professionals in Major League Soccer, each one has their own individual motivations to show up to a game and kick butt and take names. You know, Sebastian Anderson is out there trying to prove himself. Rafael Navajo is trying to get a couple goals before the end of the season. Whoever's on the back line for the Rapids is trying to like lock up a position for next year, because guys like Lalo Sabubakar, Danny Wilson are trying to figure out, you know, what's in store for them next year. Andreas Maxu is trying to make sure that he is still, you know, like penciled in as a number one DP for this team. There are a lot of guys trying to prove a lot of things. I'm currently working on an article about the Rapids rebuild that is going to have to take place in the offseason, asking questions. If FC Cincinnati could build a winner in just 2 years after winning the Wooden Spoon, and if St. Louis City can build a winner for an expansion side that then went out and is going to win the Western Conference, what lessons can we take from that? And I've finished up all my work on FC Cincinnati. And, you know, one of the things I think that's really important with thinking about the Rapids as they go into the final three games of the season, besides, you know, trying not to get the Wooden Spoon, which feels like a good possibility for me, is trying to figure out who those core players are who, you know, God willing, 2 years from now, the Rapids are back in it and are doing really well after a strong rebuild. The core of your rebuild already is on this team right now, right? A number of those really good players for Cincinnati were there when they won the Wooden Spoon. They had four or five of those players starting for them now who were there back then. Guys like Yuya Kubo and Luciano Acosta were there in 2021 when they won the Wooden Spoon last time. So who are the guys for the Rapids who are going to be the core of that team? And what are they going to do in the final three games to prove to management, to prove to Porik, I belong on this team. Do not reject me. Do not chuck me. Because Luciano Acosta is a great cautionary tale, which was, I think he was deemed expendable by DC United. They let him go to Mexico. He spent a couple of years in Mexico. He came back for Cincinnati. And now he's on the precipice of winning the Golden Boot in Major League Soccer, you know, when I think people had written him off. So the question, that's far hard for the Rapids. I mean, we're looking at players and we're like, you know, is Jack Price done? Do we write him off? Is Cole Bassett a spare part that we don't really need? Or is he core to winning MLS Cup in 2025? Like, who are the guys we need to keep? We're going to find out in the next three games.
Mark, let's talk about Cole Bassett and Brian Galvan messing with Texas. But first, tell our listeners how they can best support independent soccer journalism of the Colorado Rapids.
Matt, we're down to two mugs left, two pint glasses. Who do the pint glasses go to, Matt? Our loyal listeners who have signed up to become paid Highliners, as we like to call them. If you'd like to support the citizen soccer journalism that Matt and I do, if you like all the work we do in writing articles, in preparing for this podcast, in editing this podcast, in being Robins and Batmans of podcast glory, if you appreciate that Matt was out at a press conference today where he did an in-depth interview with the Victory Crossing sign, which has seen better days out there in Commerce City. And you go on Twitter and you'll see these pictures with Matt and Brendan Plone from the Denver Post. They're majestic. They're magisterial, as Ray Hudson might say. If you like all the work we do and you want us to keep paying our rent and occasionally hoist a pint provided by our listeners as a thank you, you can help us by subscribing to our Substack. You become a paid supporter, aka a Highliner, by putting in just $5 a month or $42 a year. The yearly subscription gets you free merch. It'll get you one of those two final pint glasses that we've got left. And you'll be supporting, as I mentioned before, citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Back to you, Matt.
So, Mark, tomorrow at time of recording, October 4th, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on FC Dallas. That'll be at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time, Mark. And then actually, because of the nature of the schedule, the Rapids are actually going to be spending the week in Texas, Mark. So they're in Texas right now, I believe, according to the schedule, and they're not going to fly back until after the Houston game on Saturday, October 7th. So I don't have a lot to say about these two games, Mark. They're functionally irrelevant from a Rapids standpoint.
way to sell it, Matt. I love it.
But okay, like the I want to see a continuation of what we've seen, Mark. I want to see Moose Bombito. I want to see Cole Bassett get opportunities. I wouldn't mind seeing Ralph Preso off of the bench. I want them to try and get Rafael Navajo a goal in this one. I want them to be better defensively, harder to beat, good in transition, and try to be effective on set pieces, both attacking and defending in that regard. I've actually really liked what I've seen from Marco Ilicha, Mark, as well. I think he's going to have a fair number of shots to deal with, especially when we talk about Houston. But Dallas on a bad run of form on this one, Mark. Jesus Ferreira is decent in the attack. Paul Areola has fallen off a cliff. There's nobody really in the midfield that I'm concerned about other than Velasco. But Dallas can't pick a formation, and that shows me that their coaching staff is throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that something sticks. That didn't work for Robin Fraser. I don't think that's working for Dallas, and I think they're a defense that can be had. Houston, of course, are now the Open Cup champions. They absolutely schooled Miami, Mark, the other night,
so
who did not have Lionel Messi available for this game. Mark, I think Houston for me has a top five midfield in Major League Soccer. Hector Herrera, Ace Ace has been absolutely fantastic. Cocos Caracia has also been really decent. And Arturs had not a renaissance, but certainly an improvement upon what he was towards the end in Columbus there. Granted, they're a bit of a goal scoring by committee, just like Dallas is. I've really liked what I've seen from Corey Baird recently, and then Bossy is kind of their big new exciting player, Mark, that maybe Rapids fans aren't as familiar with if they've only watched Houston when they've played the Rapids. I'll make this really quick on this one, Mark. I think the Rapids get a result on Wednesday. I would not be shocked with a win on this one, and I think they lose and are comfortably the second best team on Saturday at Houston.
Yeah, man, I don't fully understand what is going on in Houston, but I have watched a bunch of their games and I feel that their movement is dynamic and that their spacing is really good. They just get up the pitch really well and they interact and connect really well. And that's something that I have not said, I don't think, at all about the Rapids this year. The way they kind of move up the pitch, you know, with kind of triangular in-out movement while also someone's making that off the ball run to get to be the next connection in the triangle. They do it really, really well, and Herrera is really, you know, like a good piece of this, and I don't know where he was last season in terms of being that important connector, but it's working this year. You know, I had a little bit of extra money that kicked off from an investment. I had like $50 of fun money, and so I put it into a little bit of like betting. And so I like bet like $10 on a match every week, or I do an MLS like 3-game parlay just for fun and see what happens. And Houston has been my kind of like, this game looks pretty good, I'll put $10 on Houston, and then I win. Like, Houston's been my team for... Houston's made me $10 a couple times. You know, thank you, Houston. You've bought me fish tacos. I really appreciate it. So there, I think that is something kind of really to keep an eye on and keep watching. Yes, they were fantastic in that U.S. Open Cup final, even though... And that's one of those games that got me fish taco money. So, I agree wholeheartedly with you. Speaking of fish tacos, you know, Houston is a destination that is, I've been now, I think, to like 6 different MLS stadiums, maybe 7. And I know that Houston's not a glory stadium. Like, I think people are excited to go see Austin and people have lots of good things to say about that. But like, Houston's supposed to have great food. You know, it's supposed to be kind of like a mix of Texas barbecue and New Orleans gumbo kind of style. And so that's like one of my trips that I really want to take. And the wife says she wants to go see New Orleans. She's never been there. So I'm thinking, you know, like in the next 12 to 24 months, I go down there. Also, I have a friend who's a rabbi in Houston, and I could probably hit him up to get him to do part of my book tour. I have a three city book tour coming up, Matt. 4 if you count Pittsburgh, which I'm already in. But it's pretty cool. This year I'm on the tour. So if you live in a spectacular place and you're listening to this podcast and you have an obscene amount of money to spend on a rabbi who'd like to make your life better with spiritual wisdom, I'll give you a free copy of my book in exchange for
first-class airfare and a couple nights at the Four Seasons for a book talk. You know, it's a win-win for everybody, I think, you know? But anyways, this has nothing to do with the Rapids two games in Texas, but it's fun to talk about anyways, because, hey, we're tired, and it's been a long season. So I would say in these games, Matt's looking at me with those eyes that say, Mark, make a prediction. I would say that the Rapids are going to get 4 more points out of these games.
Wow.
I think we're on fire. I don't know why. We're crazy. We're going to get 3 at Dallas, and we're going to find a draw with Houston. What do you think is going to happen here, Matt?
I'm going to go with 3 points. I think they win at FC Dallas, Mark. I think Dallas is bad enough in the final third in ways to where the Rapids can clog up the middle, be really compact, give the wings to Dallas, and then just absorb pressure and then use that to create opportunities in transition. And I think there's no expectation on the Rapids in any game left in this season, Mark.
Right.
And I think
which makes them so dangerous.
Yes. And I also think the fact that Dallas is in the most precarious situation of the 3 teams that they have remaining. Houston is going to make the playoffs. They're fighting for seeding. RSL is going to make the playoffs. They are fighting for seeding. And so if you just look at things start off and Dallas doesn't come out and just, you know, and put the, you know, go hell for leather and then, you know, have the Rapids in an absolute siege mentality, or they don't get a early goal, the longer this game goes nil-nil, the more pressure is on Dallas. And I just think, Mark, like one little push of an opportunity that leads to a goal scoring opportunity or eventually hopefully a goal for the Rapids, and like Dallas will collapse under their own weight of expectation of playing the worst team in the conference and then not getting a result in this one. And we should point out, Mark, the first home win that the Rapids actually got this season in league play was against this FC Dallas team as well. So there's some precedent for that success as well. I will say it will be an even performance, but ultimately the one opportunity that happens will be finished by the Colorado Rapids in this game, Mark. And I will say I think we finally get a Navajo goal in Dallas. I think it will be Rafael Navajo on a completely broken down garbage goal, probably off of a set piece in the second half. And then I think they lose 2-0 at Houston on Saturday. Mark, you didn't give me a score line. Who's scoring against Dallas tomorrow?
Oh, nice. Ooh. I think it's probably going to be a 2-1 match because Jesus Ferreira is banging in goals, and he's not likely to win the Golden Boot, but he's close enough that if he can put in a goal in each of the next matches, he'll make a run at it. So, who scores for the Rapids? If he's in the game and if he's healthy, I think it'll be Gutman. I think Gutman. Yes. Gutman. Yeah, I was having flashbacks to whichever MLS, I think it was Rogadino, who said, who was calling him Gutman. And we were like, it's Goodman. So that's my take. And I think someone else for the Rapids will score and they'll win 2-1. So let's say the other one will be, I feel like Connor Ronan has like no goals this season. Does he have a goal? He must have one.
I think it's the penalty. He scored a penalty, and that was it, Mark. With one of the games last week, I can't remember which, he clinched 10 assists this season, and he's the only one in the last decade for the Rapids, I think, who's done that other than Jack Price. I think Connor Ronan gets the assist on the Navajo winner on Wednesday. But okay,
nice.
Good to hear. Mark, just to put it on record, I think we both alluded to it earlier. I think we're in agreement. The Rapids do not win the wooden spoon. It goes to Toronto. Yes.
Agreed. It's not even going to be close at the end of the season. I think we'll be up 6 points on Toronto or something like that. I think right now we're up 4.
Yes. 4 points.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Toronto look really bad.
Mark.
And we look okay, which is weird.
Let's talk about Rapids 2, Mark, who on the equivalent of decision day for MLS Next Pro, they clinched the number one overall seed in the playoff seeding. And as we've seen, Mark, the playoff structure that MLS Next Pro has is wonky, where the higher seed actually gets to pick their opponent. Benny Failhaber had yet another quote that did not age particularly well, Mark, when he said that bad money don't make money, and he picked Austin FC 2, and then his Sporting Kansas City 2 proceeded to lose that that game, and the Rapids rather reluctantly picked San Jose Earthquakes 2 for their opponent for this coming Sunday, Mark. Listeners, so the Rapids are, so this is the conference semifinals, so the Rapids have three games to play to winning the MLS Next Pro Championship should they continue to advance. And San Jose is an interesting pick, Mark, because as Brian Crookham and Eric Boucher told me this afternoon, that they picked them because they thought on the balance of everything, they were the easiest or most beatable team left in the Western Conference. But it is worth pointing out, Mark, that one of the most difficult games that Rapids 2 had this season was actually at DSGP. And as of the 60th minute, the Rapids were down 2-0 to San Jose, and then a late red card, then Spurs on a second half comeback, including a goal late into stoppage time, and the Rapids end up nicking it in penalty kicks after that. So I think it's worth pointing out, Mark, that San Jose has come to DSG and gotten a result against Rapids 2 in this game. Mark, what do we see in this? Are there expectations? Should Mark convince the Rapids fan who is like, ah, it's the two team, who cares, to care about this game, to care about this run, given the season that R2 has had?
For me, with R2, it's mostly been about whether the game was on Apple Plus or not. Because if it was, some of the games weren't streamed at all, and some of them were streamed on, and I didn't find out what the streaming story was until about 5 minutes before game time. And at that point, I was like, ah, if I can't watch it on the big screen. So that's the reason, is that it's going to be on a big screen. It'll have proper announcers. It'll be, you know, kind of a well-prepared game. I think the other thing is that guys on that team, like Ollie LaRoz and Adam Beaudry, are worth watching because they will be with the senior team. You know, the interesting question will be whether LaRoz comes with the team to Texas or whether they leave him behind for R2. I would assume they're going to leave him behind, since he probably wouldn't get money minutes in Texas. Although, if you're Ollie LaRoz, what would you rather do? Play 10 minutes for the senior team or start and anchor the R2? I mean, it's a good question. You know, but anyways, yeah, you know, the future of the Rapids is with R2, and I think those building blocks that I was talking about for when the team comes up in 2 years, hopefully, knock on wood, are there with R2 now. I mean, I think one of the other things that I'll mention about the article I'm writing about FC Cincinnati and St. Louis, and now I'm thinking about putting this into the article in some way, is one of the things they don't have going for them, neither Cincinnati nor St. Louis has produced the results they did this year with any homegrowns. All of the players that they have are players from somewhere else. Now, Brandon Vasquez is kind of formerly a homegrown. He's a young player, but he's not Cincinnati's homegrown. So, but that's like, that's what the Rapids have going for them. The future is, you know, on display for R2. And I think that's something exciting. I think the other thing is it's cup soccer. I mean, it's a knockout tournament, and it's something exciting to get behind. Matt, are there any things that you're excited about with the R2 playoff situation? And are there any players that you're particularly hyped on that you've watched this season, other than the two that I mentioned?
Yeah, I think this is the future of the club right now, Mark. You know, we are watching, you know, we're watching dead rubber games and trying to get excited about a renewed Cole Bassett, about some of the newer signings trying to get in. You know, if Navajo scores a winner, Mark, on that decision day game against RSL and the Rapids go home happy and RSL's seeding is lower, I think we're feeling more optimistic about that. But in lieu of that, the reality is that we are seeing the future of the club. We are seeing, as we saw Sebastian Anderson play really well for, I think, you know, a year and a half for, I don't think anybody had a really good start for R2 last season, but we've seen now what R2 is capable of doing in terms of getting players ready for the first team, to where Sebastian Anderson comes into that game against Austin and he does not look out of place for long stretches, and he helps contribute to getting a win. And so I look at that in the context of him, in context of Ali Larraz, in context of the two center backs likely to start for me in maybe a Mike Edwards or an Abubakar Keita. I look at this in the context, Mark, of players that are on an R2 contract that maybe get an invite to the first team training, and maybe they then work their way into being involved with the first team or a first team contract. Now, Yosuke Hanya, who for me, Mark, is the best player in Major League Soccer, in MLS Next Pro this season. He should win the MVP for that. There's no question in my mind on that. I know. Nice. I know he's Brendan Plone's guy, and I'm sure Joseph Samuelson is absolutely, you know, pumping his fist in on his bike on his commute as well. So, you know, there's young players to be excited about that. And Mark, as much as Rapids fans want to be upset at Kevin Cabral, everything that you wanted Kevin Cabral to be this season for the Rapids first team, Remy Cabral is and has been for R2.
He had a hat trick last week.
Yes, and he tied for the gold. There was a three-way tie for the Golden Boot as well, Mark. And then all three of those guys, those players that I mentioned, were all named to the MLS Next Pro Best 11. Ali Larraz, Yosuke Hanya, and then Remy Cabral as well. And Brian Kruka made an argument, Mark, that potentially there's a fourth one in there who should be in the conversation potentially. But, you know, the Rapids weren't so dominant that I think they deserved five or six guys in the best 11 for the whole of the season. But there's that. I should say to your point, Rabbi, about the logistics of, I think there's an interesting question. There's an interesting circle to square here for the front office from a logistics standpoint of the purpose of R2 being to develop players, and does Ali Larraz then deserve a 30, 45-minute run out with the first team at some point for the reward for what he's done with the reserve team? Or do you look at this as an opportunity to say, this is your chance to get silverware? Those opportunities don't come on very often and everything. Focus on that. At what point do they give the opportunity to the individual at the detriment of Rapids 2 is the club, or to the detriment of the other individuals with Rapids 2 who don't earn those opportunities? And logistically, Mark, the fact that you've got them in Dallas this whole week as well, I think it's an interesting question. William Yarbrough, Mark, is listed as out for the game tomorrow. The only other healthy first-team goalkeeper you have other than Marco Ilicha is Abe Rodriguez. Is Will flying to then sit on the bench on Saturday, Mark? Or do you potentially have where Abe Rod is sitting on the bench 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time for the game against Houston, and then is he on the charter flight all the way home, and then he's potentially getting home 2-3 in the morning Mountain Time to then start the game on Sunday night for the twos, given that Adam Beaudry is with the U.S. youth national team? Let me pull up the quote, Mark, because Eric Boucher said something interesting about that earlier today. He mentioned that there was a tight turnaround with that, and he wasn't sure about the logistics either for players who were going to be traveling with the first team or for Adam Beaudry, who's obviously with the national team. So I think it's a good question, Mark, what happens in terms of personnel, but particularly in goal on Sunday night against San Jose. And as Eric Boucher ended his quote saying, I'll let you know Sunday night. So we're going to have to wait for the lineup in that regard. I still think this is a really good R2 squad, Mark. I think the one thing for me to look out as someone who watched the two games against Quakes 2 is that they're very good with their off-the-ball movement to set up opportunities. They're very good playing their way out of the press and then disorganizing the opponent with their ball movement and with their player movement off of the ball as well. I do think there's an element of that which plays into the Rapids' hands, where R2 has been very good this season, Mark, in terms of just sitting back, waiting for a mistake to happen, get it out to one of the guys out wide, and then whether it's Ali, Marlon Vargas, Yosuke Hanya, somebody then create the link-up play into space and then just find Remy Cabral, and then you get Remy Cabral with one defender to beat or 1v1 with the goalkeeper. He usually scores in those situations. But you've seen where the Rapids really don't have control of the game, or where they're antsy, they're not comfortable, particularly in the four losses they've had this season. It's where they've gone down early and then the opponent is able to dictate the play based on what they do in possession. possession. And in that regard, that's the only thing that really gives me qualms about this matchup, because it's what San Jose Earthquakes 2 does the best. That being said, Mark, they do a good job with the ball, but similar to Austin FC maybe on Saturday, they don't always have it in terms of the final third. Their highest goal scorer, and for me, their best player is Blancas, who has 12 goals on the season and 3 assists. But then after that, you've got Buda, the midfielder, who's got 7 and 2, and then it's not a lot of goal contribution. So R2 has been goals by committee, Mark, but they've done that with a golden boot guy in Remy Cabral, and then they have Yosuke Hanya, who's best 11, and then they have Marlon Vargas, who's been fantastic as well. The Rapids have a bunch of different ways that they can beat you. Quakes 2 has one style of play that really works, and then one or two players that are actually finishing off those opportunities. And if the Rapids center backs have been as good as I think they've been this season, whether it's Keita, whether it's Mike Edwards, Blake Malone comes in as well, I think if they're able to shut down that once it comes to the final third, on the balance of play, San Jose will make more mistakes with the ball that lead to great opportunities, high quality opportunities for Rapids 2. I think Rapids 2 gets a result in this one, Mark. I am going to go 2-0, but I will say it'll effectively be a garbage goal. So a close game that is 1-0 late, and then Remy Cabral just with the flaming spear into the heart of the Goonies 2. Mark, your prediction for this Sunday, October 8th game, which is at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, Mark, and I'm looking on Ticketmaster right now. Tickets are $5 for a playoff game as well. If you have nothing else to do on Sunday, Mark, and you want to see a team that is not the Denver Broncos, and particularly a team that I think has a better chance of winning than Denver Broncos, really easy to go out to DSG and see Rapids 2. But, Mark, your prediction for this game?
I'll go 3-0. I think the boys come out and have a good game. I'm so excited that you gave Yosuke Hanya a shout there at the beginning of your comments, because in the games that I've watched, he's just calm on the ball. He's a good presence. He's got 360 vision, and I think that's kind of one of the things that I was hoping he would bring up to the senior team in the 4 matches he got into. He didn't have a lot of time. He wasn't in a good position to succeed, and the Rapids were kind of a hot mess at the time. But I think everybody in Rapids Nation is rooting for that guy. We really hope that he does some things. So 3-0 over San Jose, on to the next round, we hope.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at or X at soccer_rabbi, at LWSmentPollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions on social media using the hashtag AskHTHL, or get in touch in long form at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. As Mark mentioned earlier, you can subscribe to us via our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you'll find all of Mark's Rapids-specific writing, and you can get at us $5 a month or $42 for the year, and that does get you the one of the final two cheers to the 6 pint glasses that we have. Thank you very much for listening to us, listeners.
Peace.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.